Hello and welcome to Accountability Talks with AGA. I'm your host, Paul Marshall. All right. Well, today on the podcast, we have Mr. Chuck Hallett. Chuck, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Paul. How are you doing, man?
Doing good. So let's just, I'm going to introduce the topic here. So for our listeners who are advocates of our journal, the AGA Journal, Chuck here wrote an article, I believe it was the winter edition, winter 24 edition. Yeah, so it's not too long ago, and I encourage everybody to go read it after this. But the topic was essentially, you know, how can we attract the next generation of accountants, whether they're CPAs or CGFMs or just accounting people in general? Because, you know, Chuck, when you wrote that article, you found some lacking, some things happening with the pipeline. But that's the topic. But right just before that, if you don't mind, do you think you could just give our audience a little bit about yourself? Tell us about your background.
Sure. I'm retired 14 years. I became a practicing accountant in 1977, going to what is now the international firm of Deloitte. I interviewed with the Internal Revenue Service, with the Internal Revenue Service during college. And then I moved around to different Deloitte offices. And finally, I started my own office in Olympia, Washington in 1983. And had that office until my retirement in the year 2010. Along the way, I tried to be active, sitting on national income tax committees, being the board liaison to ethics. I was the state president and chair for the Washington Society of CPAs. I sat on national council for the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. It was a really special career.
Well, so folks, we're talking to somebody who knows accounting. So happy to have you here today, Chuck. Well, let's get into it. So if folks read your article, you know, obviously there's a thought that the pipeline for CPAs, for certified government accountants is kind of on the wane. Do you mind just telling us very high level to start off with, you know, why you felt you needed to write the article? What have you observed in this department?
Well, beginning in 2022, major news outlets began reporting on a crisis in the accounting profession. The shrinking numbers of accounting majors graduating from U.S. colleges and universities, coupled with the retirements and resignations of seasoned accountants, would soon leave American enterprises vulnerable in numerous ways. AGA is following the trends and participating in thought leadership opportunities related to this issue. Today, I hope to present several points of view about the possible causes and solutions and its effect on our profession.
So, Chuck, yeah, I'm just curious before we get through it, but personally speaking, so, you know, we're talking about 2022, the report came out. Even before that, you know, at Deloitte, or, you know, did you start noticing that, you know, CPAs were kind of diminishing?
Oh, yeah. There was a study that was conducted more than 20 years ago that saw some of the downward trend in accounting was a result of things like ignorance of accounting careers. Do they know what their options were upon graduation? Or even becoming a student and going through the classes. There was bad information about the profession. The press sometimes just doesn't like the accounting profession as an exciting profession. And there was negative perceptions of the role of accountants in society. And I believe that had really grown. And it has continued to grow. There was other research at the time suggesting that there were more attractive career alternatives, both financially and otherwise. And unfortunately, our profession didn't take a lot of action at that time in order to kind of reverse what was going on.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, you and I know that it definitely is exciting, but you're right. I mean, you tell people you're an accountant, people are like, oh, that sounds so boring. You know, they don't know. It can be exciting and you can make a good living off of it for sure. So, but let's go through, I want to go through your points here because it will be very interesting to hear, you know, some of the reasons, the problem here, what is seen as the problem of why our pipeline is diminishing. And then maybe you and I can kind of encourage people to see positive side too. So the first one here, you talk about there's just a declining interest in general in the profession. Can you tell us more?
Yeah. It's gotten to the point where today 35% of practicing CPAs are 65 years or older, which means that there aren't enough accountants coming in the profession to get rid of the accountants who are retiring. And in the 2 years between 2020 and 2022, 300,000 accountants left their jobs, which was a 17% decline, which is more than the baby boomer retirements. Even young professionals, 25 to 34, and mid-career professionals, 45 to 54, also quit in high numbers during this period. Many of them went to fintech, and that is finance and technology. Even before that, the numbers of students preparing for the accounting field was declining. According to the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, the AICPA, the number of students who completed a bachelor's degree in accounting declined nearly 9% from 57,500 in 2012 to about 52,500 in 2020. So as a result, the number of new accountants entering the market today will not replace the number of retirements and career changes.
Yeah, and I mean, some of that, I guess, is to be expected with technology. I mean, everybody says the bots are going to take everybody's job, including a lot of accountants' jobs, right? But, I mean, don't you feel like there's got to still be a place for true accounting expertise? Because it's not just, here's a FASB standard, a FASAB standard. I mean, you have to interpret that stuff with your, you know, with intelligence, not just, it's not just a spreadsheet number crunching, right?
No, absolutely. I mean, and there's all sorts of interpretations. And to go off a little bit of what we've been talking about, as an expert witness, I had testified from Alaska and Hawaii all the way to Florida, Texas, and so forth about interpretations of FASB and accounting and the processes of how accountants actually did their work. And was it up to the standard and so forth? And getting into the profession, though, it was potentially lucrative. I remember my beginning salary was $12,000 a year, which at that time was a good salary. Today in the state of Washington, that starting salary is only $49,130 a year. Other states are as high as $81,000 a year. But to compare that to other industries, such as being a software engineer at Google, could start with an annual base pay of $130,000+, and that's with only a four-year degree. And in addition to the $130,000, there's generally an average of another $65,000+ in other compensation. So this huge disparity today certainly turns many potential candidates away.
Right. Yeah. And that was like one of the big number two, you know, number two topic is lower salaries in general. Right. And I mean, a couple of questions, follow-up questions for you on this though. So number one, you know, there's the commercial accounting world. There's the government accounting world. I mean, the government salaries are kind of capped by, you know, OPM and schedules and, you know, there's only so high you can go. That's kind of limited by the government. So a lot of people get into government for the mission, more so necessarily than the dollars. But even in the private sector, this, what you're talking about is folks in the private sector don't even want to get into it because they don't make as much money coming out of school as a Google engineer or IT folks, right? That's essentially what you're getting at.
Right. I used to recruit for the international firm, and we'd be recruiting against governmental hiring. You know, we would want to hire the best and the brightest. Certainly the government would too. So at the beginning, the starting salaries were really, really similar. The benefits were really, really similar. And depending upon where you were going within public accounting, or if you were working through the AGA, you're advancing at a pretty similar rate. However, being in public practice would give you the opportunity of some of the best and the brightest being able to make more and more money, where many of the accountants, they're going to limit themselves. I worked with an accountant for many, many years. She had no interest in becoming a partner in our CPA firm. She just wanted to be the CPA at that level, not having to reach out and take more and more responsibility. And that was normal amongst many people in public practice. And I got to believe there's the same in different industries, because many accountants are moving from public practice into what I call governmental accounting and vice versa.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, this is the great thing about the USA is there's no limit on your potential. If you want to be rich and famous, I mean, you can go down that path and do what you want to do. I mean, but you know, if you want to be very successful and make a lot of money in accounting world, then you can definitely do it. There's ways to do it. You did it. I mean, you did great as a partner over there. Or if you want to do a government service, I mean, you may not make as much, but you're going to be working in very powerful positions with, you know, people in high levels of government. So it's what you want to do. I think people just don't realize that coming straight out of school, you know, the salary just deters you right away, but they don't see the big picture or what you could eventually do, right?
Sure. And many of the governmental accountants, they know that they may not want to become the CPA.
Right.
So the 120-hour education rather than the 150-hour education is a boom to them, because they get out of college a year earlier and they start making money a year sooner. And what's confusing to me is most states don't specify the topics that need to be covered in the added 30 hours of education. Some states still allow students to sit for the CPA exam with 120 hours, but they won't permit licensure until completion of the 150 hours and 1 year experience. And that would have discouraged me from becoming an accountant. And I believe it's likely discouraging some of the best and the brightest now. Even a 2019 University of Chicago School of Business study concluded the 150-hour rule to sit for the CPA exam led fewer students to enter the profession. In fact, the initial effect of the increase in required credit hours was dramatic. In the year before the rule, the number of first-time CPA exam candidates increased. The year after the rule was in effect, the number declined as much as 75% in some jurisdictions.
Yeah, and I mean, aren't they changing the CPA exam again? Just, is it this year or next year? I heard that that's being changed, so people are rushing to take it now.
Well, not so much as increasing the number of hours.
Right, right.
What's happening is today they're looking at having three categories of becoming a CPA, where you take the section of the exam that is one of the sections that you want to practice in. Once you get your CPA, you're expected to do all three of the sciences. You're licensed to do all three of the sciences. And that could be good. It really depends, because when people went to work for the IRS, such as myself, or when I went to work for the international firm, or when people came to work for our firms, there were specific job duties and responsibilities that we had to do that were akin to working at the IRS or for an international firm or for our firm. And the training was different. So I believe the CPA firms or the Internal Revenue Service or government are still going to need to train the accountants to do what they're expected to do when they come to work in that particular office. Obviously, the education is going to help.
Yeah.
And now, with the CPA exam went to a computer-based exam. And you've only got an 18 to 30-month window to pass all of the parts. That's the bad news. The good news is you can now take the test every 3 months. Then the bad news is, can your employer give you enough time to study for the exam so you can take it every 3 months? So about 1,000 candidates quit pursuing the CPA exam after passing 3 of the 4 parts. 2,000 quit after passing only 2 parts. So given more time, perhaps more of the best and the brightest will choose to achieve the CPA credential. Over the years, many candidates have walked away from accounting for lack of time to pass all 4 parts. And it could have happened to me. The day before I sat for the exam for the first time, I was injured in a car accident. Each day I was transported back and forth to the hospital to sit for the exam. And I would like to believe I would have passed the CPA exam on my first try if not for the accident. But having the additional time helped tremendously. And NASBA recently extended the time allowed to pass all 4 parts of the exam from 18 to 30 months. Individual boards must officially adopt the extension, which has not yet happened. I don't believe this will encourage more college students to choose accounting majors, but those who do will have more time to earn the CPA credential.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree this time limitation is an issue. I'll tell you my story, and I'm sorry about you had that accident with your exam. I had a crazy time too. So I had the 120, and then I had to get the additional hours, and I actually even ended up going to grad school, and I guess I didn't pay enough attention, because even when I was finished grad school, some of the classes didn't qualify. So I had to go out and take more classes, remotely, and to get my 150, it was just ridiculous. And then I finally took the exam, and I went down to the very last possible eligible day to pass all 4 parts, and I did. I finally passed it, but it was a nightmare. So I definitely sympathize with folks trying to take that test and get those hours. That's I hate to say it, but it's a big deterrent. But, you sure feel good once you pass it, I'll tell you that. So,
When you're going to school, I think it's important that your advisor, there was always a professor that you could choose where I went to school to be your advisor. And I actually met with that advisor, and I would encourage the students to meet with that advisor, because they can help you make sure you've got the classes that are needed in order to graduate. And then, by the way, when people came on campus to interview, such as me, I interviewed both for the international firm and both for our firm on campus. We would network with those professors. So people who are going to school, if you're meeting with your professors, they're going to remember who you are when they're talking to the folks coming on in order to hire. And I believe that gives you an edge in order to talk to those professors, and they will remember the people that they're talking to also.
Yep, for sure. So tell us about work requirement challenges that you saw.
I think, you got to take them one step at a time as far as the different challenges, because a lot of the things that you come across in your first few years, you're seeing for the very first time. And I don't care whether you're in government or you're in public or private practice. And you just have to take it one step at a time. And then today, a lot of the folks don't believe you need to be a CPA because there's so many other designations today. Since the 80s, other designations have emerged. We always had the enrolled agent with the IRS, but now we have the certified fraud examiner, the certified forensic accountant, the certified government financial manager, and that's been available through AGA since 94, and the certified tax coach since 2009. And I believe it's probably likely that the variety of all of these options have affected the value of the CPA credential, and a lot of the younger folks might be attracted to one or more of the other titles rather than to the CPA. And if current salaries and benefits are any indication, the employers may have begun to presume that all type designations are interchangeable. Because today, CPAs generally are not earning more than the others until you get to the upper echelon of some of what I would consider the public accounting practice. Because in those jobs, many of the CPAs can make seven figures.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously this is an AGA podcast, so, you know, but I've always said, I think the CPA is, that's the foundation. Now, if you're a serious accountant, you want to be in that profession, you need to get that thing. I mean, that's just like the ground floor sort of thing. If you're going to work in the government, you know, I'd prefer if you did get your CPA, but if for whatever reason you can't, I mean, CGFM is great too. I mean, that government accounting is quite unique compared to, you know, public practice stuff. So, I mean, I have both of them. I think to be your best self in your career, I'd encourage anybody doing government accounting to get both certifications too. And don't ignore that CPA. Yeah. Just because you have a CGFM, I mean, that's great. But CPA really shows that you are very disciplined. You really know your topic. You know, people can trust you to support anything. I mean, that's a really strong credential, obviously. I know you would agree with that.
Oh, absolutely. I was the CGFM also, actually. And when you're talking to folks in accounting and you're with a group and you don't have the CPA credential, and honestly, I didn't work very long with all of these other rules that were out there for the different folks I was just talking about, the certified fraud examiners and stuff, but when it came up that I was a CPA and maybe somebody else wasn't, I think the CPA garnered a lot of respect instantly in that particular conversation. But there was a change in the state of Washington that allowed non-CPAs to become CPA owners in CPA firms. And quite frankly, I believe they can be great CPA firm owners. And I was fortunate to admit the first non-licensee number one on license, and brought substantial computer skills to our firm when computing and accounting was in its infancy. She worked hard, had a great work ethic. The clients loved her. She knew more about computers than all of our CPAs combined. Many of my peers did not like what I was doing and disagreed, suggesting the non-CPA owner diminish the profession, since other professions, medicine, law, engineering, architecture, they do not allow the non-licensed firm owners. But in my opinion, this employee clearly had earned the opportunity for ownership, and she deserved the advancement. But it poses interesting questions going forward, because many of these things that we're talking about happened after that particular event.
Right. No, and that's great. I mean, so I think this is our last question. We got about 5 minutes. I was just curious, you know, if you might summarize just a little bit about what you think some of the solutions might be to this, in your opinion. So, yeah, just a few more minutes just to give us your insights on that.
Sure. I believe it's complicated. And many factors actually go into this. And the AICPA last year released the draft of an 8-point plan to address these challenges. In their response, South Carolina Association of CPAs stated the additional 30 credit hours required to sit for the CPA form a barrier to licensing and suggested a number of solutions, including a longer window of testing opportunities. And some of the states are really looking at the longer window, and I believe that will really help. And July 1st, 2023, Minnesota reverted back to the 120 hours. But when you have a CPA license, you generally have reciprocity, which means we can go from state to state and still be licensed. But that's not going to be true for the CPAs that come out of that come out of Minnesota. South Carolina dropped a similar initiative. My biggest concern is whether the 150-hour rule causes the loss of the best and the brightest to other professions. Yet, I wonder whether the 120-hour candidate is the best solution in the long run. And maybe the curricula could be moved in order to cover the material more efficiently in accounting programs. Educators already cover more material than ever before, including technology and data topics, but maybe the material could be organized differently. When I went to college, I was looking for a way to earn the most amount of money in the least amount of time. And what I discovered in accounting, to my surprise, was a profession that can positively impact lives and offer a stimulating variety of challenges to tackle. Governmental accounting gives practitioners the chance to work on real-life problems and support societal rules and regulations. And the people who need accounting assistance come from all walks of life. What other profession can allow us to elevate the success of so many different types of professionals? We know about the doctors and the attorneys, but what about the diamond manufacturers, dirt contractors, celebrities, professional athletes, barbecue pitmasters? And that's just from my experience. Doors open to a variety of roles in a career that can be lucrative. When I started thinking about this, I really believed that relaxing the 150-hour requirement was the solution in order to get more people into our profession. And then I interviewed folks from the other point of view. Many of them were college educators. And when I was done, I wasn't convinced that the 150-hour requirement change was the solution. Clearly, our situation calls for a different, more specialized education rather than a longer one, and a different way of tracking new talent to the accounting workforce. And I believe the answer's there. I just don't know that we're ready to find it quite yet.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, we don't always have the solutions and the answers, but we know the problems and how we can start looking in the right direction. I mean, my humble opinion, I think, again, for government folks, the mission is important, you know, doing this because you love it, because you care about the country. And then, you know, on the private sector, I think, again, people coming out of school need to realize you're investing in a CPA or a certification in this accounting career. You may not make as much as, you know, Amazon and Google today, but believe me, if you're really good at this, you're going to be just fine. You're going to make plenty of dollars and be in a, you know, a satisfying career. So, but with that, yeah, Chuck, no, I really appreciate your time. I thought this was a great article. I really appreciate your insight, and, you know, you had a great career in this, and we love hearing your perspective. So I just want to say thanks again for joining our podcast.
Well, thank you, Paul. This was really a great experience, and the Journal of Governmental Financial Management is one of my favorites, and the folks that I've been able to work with there are actually terrific people, and I appreciate the opportunity to meet you through them, and good luck with everything you're doing.
Thanks again, and with that, that was Accountability Talks with AGA, and I'm your host, Paul Marshall, signing off.